Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shaped the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
Good evening, and you are very welcome to Live on Air, the Irish program. It seems like only, I'd say, about 3 hours and 2 minutes since I was with you. In fact, that's exactly what it is. If you were listening earlier, you would know that I was doing the lifestyle show for Selena. And indeed, I'll be back again tomorrow. Anyway, look, we're here now. And thanks very much to Dave for looking after you and all the nice things he says. He's a nice fella, is Dave. He kept the seat warm for me. So thanks a million, Dave. And safe home. And enjoy the programme as you travel. Coming up on the programme this evening, George Lee and myself will be chatting about some of the stories that made headlines in Ireland over the last 7 days. I'll also be talking to a fascinating lady by the name of Mary Custers McCarthy. I was in Nurka recently, and that is where Mary lives, and met up with her and had the microphone, so we had a bit of a chat. She has just written a book. She's currently writing another, and she's had a fascinating life, so we'll find out a little bit about that when I chat to Mary, or when I play the interview that I had with Mary. Patricia Traynor and myself get together regularly, and she tells me great old stories on microphone. Today she's going to be talking about where our names come from, and she'll be talking about a lady called Macha, the goddess of the horses. And I am delighted to say that we will also be joined on the programme by the Irish ambassador to Spain, that's Sheila Maguire. And I will be talking to the ambassador about some of the events, the Irish cultural events happening around Spain in the next wee while. There's quite a number of things happening. So I'm looking forward to chatting to the Irish ambassador, Sheila Maguire. Not the first time she's been on the programme, and glad to be welcoming her back. Now, we'll have some famous birthdays as well. And I'll be playing the number one song from this very day, the 14th of October. October 1990, and there'll be other great bits and pieces in there too. So please do stay with me if you can for that. And we're going to start with the birthdays. Today, the 14th of October, is Pascal Mooney's birthday. If you're a radio or a country and western buff in Ireland, you will know that Pascal Mooney is very much into that broadcaster, promoter as well, as far as I know. Born in Drumshambo on this day back in 1947, and Eamon de Valera was born in New York, in Brooklyn to be precise. He was born to a Spanish father and an Irish mother on this very day back in 1882. I don't have any famous birthdays for tomorrow, but Wednesday is the 16th of October, and it was on that day in Dublin in 1854 that Oscar Wilde was born. Michael Collins was born in Clonakilty on that day in 1890. The wonderful entertainer that was Joe Dolan was born in Mullingar in 1943 on that day. And Gerard Collins, we know him as Jerry Collins, he was a politician, Fianna Fáil politician for a long time, born in Abbeyfeel on that day in 1938. Thursday is the 17th of October, and Bernadette Nolan, the singer, born in Dublin from 1960, or in 1960, she's one of the Nolan sisters, obviously. On Friday, it's the 18th of October, and Paddy Riley was born in 1939, not the same fellow that was urged to come back to Bally James Duff. We're talking about Paddy Riley, the singer. Michael Gambon, the actor, was born in Dublin on the 19th of October, 1940. So on Saturday, Michael Gambon will be celebrating his birthday. And next next Sunday is the 20th of October, and Eddie Macken, the wonderful horse man, the show jumper, he was born in Granard in 1940 on that day. Mike Murphy, entertainer and RTE personality, born in Dublin in 1941 on that day. The wonderful Munster and Ireland rugby player Paul O'Connell was born in Limerick in 1979. And Owen O'Duffy, the first commissioner of An Garda Síochána, was born in County Monaghan on that day in 1892. Just some of the famous birthdays happening in this coming week, and we wish those that are still with us a very happy birthday as they celebrate. I did tell you that Joe Dolan's birthday would have been on Wednesday, which is the 16th of October. He was born in Mullingar in 1943, and that's our first musical piece today from the wonderful, the late unfortunately, but the great Joe Dolan. Here's a song that's called I Need You.
Your love is as high as a bird in the sky, and I need you. My love's gonna last till the day that I die, for I need you. I'll never say no to the love that I've known, making me feel so happy inside. A heaven I found, it walks on the ground, and I need you. What more can I say, for with each passing day, girl, I need you. My love grows and grows, and my feelings I show, for I need you.
Need you.
Oh, don't ever go, for I want you to know that without you I'm tied down inside. Stay with me tonight, everything is alright, and I need you. I need to know that you. Gonna last till the day that I die, for I need you.
Need you.
I'll never say no to the love that I know, making me feel so happy inside. A heaven I found, it walks on the ground, and I need you.
Song from Joe Dolan, and if he was still with us, he'd be celebrating his birthday on Wednesday. That's a song that's called I Need You. Going to take a quick break right now, come back to me after that, and I will introduce the wee story from Patricia Traynor.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net.
Welcome back to the programme. It's not often I get caught out, but the last time that I sat with Patricia and we recorded a few stories, she caught me out. Here she is to tell you about where we get our names. And catch me out, Patricia.
Well, today, Ger, we're going to talk about names. Have you ever wondered where the name Sweeney comes from?
I have, and I have an idea that it was Scottish originally and then Northern Irish, because my grandfather actually comes from Northern Ireland.
Well done, you've done your homework. Yes, it is Scottish, and of course it really comes from Mac Sweeney. We know Mac meaning a son of, and Sweeney meaning pleasant or well-disposed, which I'm sure all the listeners would agree describes you perfectly. Well, my name is Patricia Traynor. In Irish, it is Padraigín Ní Chraonair. Padraigín is the feminine form of Padraig, Patrick, which means nobleman, and the in in a noun in Irish either makes it a diminutive like potchín, a little pot, or, well, you know what potchín is, or it makes it feminine, which is in the case of Patricia. Ní means daughter of, and train means strong, and ir is the genitive form of far, which means man. So my name is Patricia, daughter of the strong man, my dad. Well, today I'm going to talk about a very interesting lady whose name we will find out as the story progresses. We'll start with Cruncu, who was a wealthy farmer whose wife had died, leaving him with four sons. For many years, Cruncu lived without a wife, although he had many servants, until one day, out of the blue, a beautiful woman, elegantly dressed and with great dignity, entered the house. Without saying a word, she began preparing the evening meal. She then sat down with the family and they all ate in silence. After dinner, she went outside and milked the cow. Later that night, when Cruncu went to bed, she went to his room and lay down beside him and became his wife. She told him her name, but insisted that he should never tell it to anyone. They lived happily for many years. One day, there was a great fair in Ulster and Cruncu wanted to go. His wife begged him not to go because she was afraid that he might let slip her name. He promised not to say a word about her and off he went. It was a great occasion with the king and queen and the greatest champions and heroes of Ulster present. There were lots of feats and contests to prove one's strength and skill. But the most important event was a chariot race, which was easily won by the king's horses, who were famous for being the fastest horses in all of Ireland. Cruncu heard people's adulation of the king's horses, and perhaps because he'd had a drop too much of the whisky, cried out, "Oh, my wife can run faster than the king's horses." The king was furious when he heard this and ordered his soldiers to bring Cruncu before him. "So your wife can run faster than my horses? Well, bring her here and she can race against them." Cruncu tried to apologise and said, "Oh, his wife was pregnant and couldn't run." "Well, you should have thought of that before you insulted me," said the king. Cruncu's wife knew something was wrong when she heard the loud knock at the door. She opened it to find two men who told her Cruncu had boasted that she could run faster than the king's horses. And so the king demanded her to come immediately and to take part in a race with the king's fastest horses. Oh, she begged them to have pity on her, but they wouldn't listen, saying her husband would be killed if she refused to accompany them. Reluctantly, she went with them to the fair. When she arrived before the king, she begged him for mercy, saying he must see that she was expecting a baby, and pleaded with him to wait until after the baby was born, saying that then she would run a race, but the king was adamant. The woman then turned to the crowds and begged them to help her, saying that each of them had been born of a mother and they should have respect for her. No one came forward. She then told them that they would pay a high price for their cruelty. The king asked her name. She said, "My name is Macha, and my name and my child's name will remain in this place forever. Now, bring the horses and I will race against them." The crowds cheered in excitement and the race began. Macha ran with all her strength, and right from the beginning she was out in front and won the race easily. But then she fell to the ground and gave birth, not to one baby, but two, a boy and a girl. As her twins were born, Macha gave out a loud scream, which caused all the men to lose their strength and to fall on the ground helpless and to be as weak as a woman with labour pains. Macha said, "Because of your cruel treatment of me, I will put a curse on you. Whenever you are under attack, you will become as defenceless and weak as a woman in childbirth, and this will last for 5 days and four nights, and this curse will affect your descendants for nine generations." The place became known as Éireann Macha, which means the twins of Macha, and later became Ardwacha or Armagh, as it is known today. And for years after, whenever Ulster was under attack, the Ulstermen became weak and powerless. The women and children were not affected by the curse. And the only man not affected by the curse was Cuchulainn, because he, like Macha herself, was of a magic tribe, the Tuatha De Danann. It was Cuchulainn who single-handed had to defend Ulster when Maeve tried to steal the famous brown bull. But then, that is another story for another day.
And another day, another story. Looking forward to it already. Thank you to Patricia Traynor. I did promise you that I would play the number one song from this day, the 14th of October, back in 1990. We like to take an Irish number one where possible during the week. It took me a long time to find it. Yeah, I think I started somewhere around 1970 or in 1968, actually, I started looking for an Irish number one. And the first one that I came across for the 14th of October was actually 1990, believe it or not. So anyway, here it is for you. It's a group of lads that kind of burst onto the scene with this particular song. And I remember somebody telling me a story about setting up a studio for them for a radio interview. And the lads kind of arrived a little bit late. And then when they arrived, they said, no, we just need one microphone. That's it for the whole lot. Just the one microphone. And afterwards, the engineer turned to the presenter and said, I don't think those lads are going to go very far. About 4 or 5 weeks later, they were number one with this particular song. I'm talking about the Saw Doctors and a great song called I Used to Love Her.
I have fallen for another, she can make her own way home. And even if she asked me now, and I'd let her go alone. But I used to see her up the chapel when she went to Sunday Mass. And when she go up to receive, I'd kneel down there and watch her pass. The glory of her ass. I used to love her. Concern on Christmas Eve. She was on a 40 in her fast, just water and black tea. And I walked straight up and made an ostentatious contribution. And I winked at her to tell her I'd seduce her in the future when she's feeling looser. I used to love her. I used to love her once, a long, long time ago. I used to love her. She's no longer my obsession. A lot of thoughts and dreams I had of her would take 6 months in confession. See, I met this young one Thursday night, and she's into free expression. And her mission is to rid the world of this sinful repression. Then we had a session. I used to love her. I used to love her.
Saw Doctors from County Galway and a fabulous song. It's called I Used to Love Her. It was number one in Ireland on this very day back in 1990. Going to take a quick break right now. Come back to me just after that and you'll hear the interview that I did with a fascinating lady by the name of Mary Custers McCarthy.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net.
I'm standing in Nerka. A beautiful day it is, and I'm chatting to a lady who has just launched another book. There's a few books in this lady. She's originally from Cappoquin in County Waterford, and her name is Mary Custers McCarthy. Mary, good to talk to you.
Nice to meet you.
The most recent book that you have launched, it's about murders from all parts of the world. Tell me about it. Tell me about the name of it first.
Murder Knows No Borders. And it starts from Sydney, Australia, over to Seattle in United States and every country in between, a lot of countries in between.
And are you a kind of a murder buff?
Yes, I am. I like to try and figure out what makes people commit murder. And knowing also that about 65% of all murders are committed by people that we actually know, that fascinates me to figure out why.
And how did you get interested in the whole murder scene?
From my mother years ago. She used to buy all these true crime magazines. Okay. And I wasn't supposed to read them, but I always made sure that I got my hands on them. And I found them kind of quite interesting.
All right, we'll come back to the book in a minute. I know that you're living here in Spain for about 6 or 7 years, but you've been out of Ireland, you tell me, for well over 50 years. You've lived in how many countries?
Oh, I'd have to really think about that one. It's quite a lot.
Okay. Ream some of them up for me.
England, France, South Africa, America, Croatia, Lebanon, Israel, Channel Islands, and...
I know there's a lot of stories attached to what you were doing, so we won't get into those, but how did you end up moving to those various different places throughout the years?
A lot was having a travel bug, and then I started working for the United Nations. And, of course, with the United Nations, you do end up moving to a lot of different countries.
How does a girl from Cappoquin get a job with the United Nations?
By forging my leaving certificate, because I was expelled before I got a chance to do my leaving certificate.
Right.
So I had to forge that, and the rest was BS.
In what capacity did you first join the UN?
I was in New York, and I needed a visa, and if you got a job at the United Nations, you could actually stay there on a special United Nations permit. And I did an exam, a test, and showed my forged certificate, leaving certificate, and I got a job in codification. And that was reading documents and giving them a number that they could be filed under a code. And then the trouble had started in South Lebanon, and peacekeepers were being sent out from the United Nations, and they needed civilian staff to do administration from the field back to New York, and... I went to Lebanon.
That must have been a fascinating experience. And am I right in saying this is where you met your husband?
That's right, yes. My husband used to work with FAO, the Food and Agricultural Organization, in Rome. So, and he was an engineer, and he was on loan to the peacekeeping. And I came from New York, and we met, fell in love, and the rest is history.
And he was a Dutchman?
He was a Dutchman, yeah. Living in Rome, and he spoke 6 languages. So we never had a language problem, wherever we went.
Did he speak Irish?
He had trouble with that one.
Did he?
Hmm.
Yeah. Do you speak Irish?
No.
All right, okay. Isn't it wonder your poor husband had trouble with it, so. And sure, you must have had fantastic adventures, did you?
Yes. Yeah. And I appreciate every adventure. I don't know why or how, but I appreciate it. That I've had a good life.
Now, you retired from the United Nations and various other things that you were doing, but the writing bug has got you for a little while. When did you start writing?
I suppose I've been writing all my life. My father gave me a little Olivetti portable typewriter when I was 10, because he had actually bought... the latest thing then was a golf ball. And he gave me the little portable Olivetti, and I was 10. And he said, you'll be a writer one day. So I was used to write a lot of rubbish over the years, nothing, mostly work thing related as well. But then when I retired in The Hague, because I was working with the International War Crimes Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, and then I retired, and I started writing kind of seriously. And I had some crime stories written in True Detective in the UK, and then I had 5 more written on a website. Crime magazine in the States, and then I thought, okay, I'd put the whole lot together in a book.
Now, you told me a little earlier on that you wrote some short stories as well, and one of them was about the building of the cinema in Cappoquin. Tell me that story.
And that is actually on a website called Write Bitch Write in their April edition. And the September one is carrying another one about an experience that I had with a friend at the Windows of the World, which was the restaurant on in the World Trade Center buildings. And that's just come out in September. And they're two personal stories.
Okay.
The murder, the true crime, are not.
Are you sure?
Well, actually, somebody asked me, was it a biography? So, no, I have not been going around the world as a hit woman, murdering people in different countries.
You're working on a few more books as well. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
I'm actually working on a cookbook, and it is a three-course meal, dinner, from the 193 countries that are member states of the United Nations.
Wow.
And that can offer an opportunity to mix and match a meal with a different starter from, say, Sweden and a main course from Ireland or dessert from France or whatever in one book, or just have a three-course meal from any country that you want to pick from of the 193. So I'm working on that right now.
I often wonder when people are writing books, do they remember various parts? Do you remember what you wrote for starter, main course and dessert for the Irish page?
I do. It was something to do with Dublin Bay prawns.
Oh, wow.
And then I think there was salmon.
Right.
And meat courses with chicken, something I can't remember.
Okay.
Considering that I really am not a cook.
You're not a cook and you're writing a cookbook.
Do I have to be an Eskimo to write about Eskimos?
No.
Do I have to be a camel to walk in the desert? No.
No.
So I like food.
Okay.
And I like somebody else to cook it.
Okay.
And have you any culinary skills at all?
None whatsoever. I'm quite capable of poisoning people. So if I can't kill them with my murder experience, I'll poison them to death. So anybody looking for a hit woman, I'm your woman.
You're your woman.
Get in touch.
And she used to work in the UN, so she knows people who know people. I'm editing all this, but I'm leaving that bit in. Yeah, I promise you. All right, now, remind me, the name of the book.
Murder Knows No Borders.
And it's available in all good bookstores. I know it's available here in Nurka, but it's available on Amazon as well.
And Kindle and on paperback.
So go and look for that. Alrighty. We might talk to you about the cookbook again and see what kind of reaction you got.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time and your interest.
That's Mary Custers McCarthy from Capquid in County Waterford originally, now living very happily and peacefully in Nurka.
Well, I'm tired of getting through to you. It ain't no good 'cause I just
Nolan Sisters from all those years ago. And that's a song that I had forgotten about, but I went looking for Nolan's music and I found that in my file somewhere. And I said, here, let's play that. It's called Attention to Me. Right, it's time for the G2 Summit. But can I just say to you, this was recorded a day or so ago. And when it was being recorded, technology wasn't our friend. So apologies for that. You are very welcome to this week's G2 Summit. There's a lot of summits going on at the minute, but let's figure out what's happening with the G2. The two G's, Ger Sweeney and George Lee at the other side of the world. Hiya, George.
How you doing, Ger? Let's see if the summit happening, will we?
Let's see if the summit. I like boom, boom. Like that. I like that now, in fairness. We're going to start with the thing that we don't like to start with or even mention at this stage, but I wonder, is there light at the end of the Brexit tunnel?
Me itch is back. I don't know. I mean, it was always going to come down to the last minute. It was always going to come down to brinkmanship. It was always going to come down to a minute to 12. Will something get over the line? I think maybe something has to get over the line for everybody. Interesting interview with John Bercow, the Speaker of the House. Yeah. He was on the Late Late Show. He was very sanguine about the whole thing. While he couldn't openly criticise anybody, he was saying that he does feel that Johnson is the type of guy that needs to do deals. And Johnson also sees that his name will be writ large in British history if he doesn't get this thing sorted.
Interesting story about the risk of dozens of Gardaí facing dismissal because they cannot pass a fitness test. Now, two have been sacked in recent weeks and about 25 have received written warnings telling them that unless they pass this physical test within the next 14 days, that they will be sacked.
And this has formed part of the Garda training for the last number of years. I'd be close enough to this. I've known some people that have gone through it. It's what they call the beep test, Ger, which is essentially a test that where two cones are set up at a distance apart and you're timed on your run between them.
Okay.
Interestingly, Niall Moyna, who's the professor in I think it's in DCU, who looks after a lot of the fitness stuff for a lot of the intra-county teams and that as well. Niall Moyna was saying that actually the level that this thing is set for the guards at is the fitness level that a 16-year-old should have.
That's right.
But what he did say was that he felt that it was skewed in favour of males rather than females, because obviously the female just don't have the body mass or the muscle that a male has. And that's not been sexist. That's a fact.
Right.
I suppose there's two ways of looking at this. One is, yeah, it's awful for the poor guards involved. The other thing is that, you know, they do need to have a level of fitness. Perhaps it's something that needs to be looked at. Maybe they've set the bar too high for them. Who knows? But it is part of their training.
All right. Okay. Interestingly, though, that they're taking it so seriously, and they need to take it seriously because for a very long time, a lot of the members would have been out of condition and wouldn't have been keeping up the training unless they were doing something like playing football or hurling themselves. So it's good, I suppose, to see.
It is, Ger, but if you go 10 years in, 20 years in from their training, once you get through the beep test at the start and once you get your fitness levels up, how is it monitored from there?
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the problem.
All right. Okie dokie. The Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade has established a new team to handle the growing number of people seeking Irish citizenship through the Foreign Births Registration process. And the process, also known as Citizenship by Descent, is run through the Passport Service and it's available to anybody who has an Irish parent born on the island of Ireland. This is a problem that has been coming down the track since 2016. In fact, not even coming down the track, but on the track since the Brexit vote in the UK particularly. So it seems that they've done something significant.
I know, talking to an awful lot of British people over the last while, everybody in Britain is looking to see if they have some Irish ancestry somewhere.
That's right.
So that they can get a passport. And I think particularly people that do travel quite a bit now want to travel on Irish passports. The number of applications from foreign-born individuals seeking citizenship has more than trebled, Ger, since 2016.
Wow.
Documents released under the Freedom of Information Act show the number of foreign-born individuals before 2016 was around 6,000 a year. This year, the number of applications rocketed. Actually, they said to 24,000 and has continued to grow,
right,
putting pressure on existing resources. So, yeah, look, I suppose it's a growth area in the Department of Foreign Affairs that if you want to get a passport. Now, that said, I have to say the passport application process in Ireland has speeded up considerably and they have brought in technology that allows you to send it off your passport and get it back pretty much straight away. And I have to take my hat off to them. I wouldn't always be in awe of the public service and what they do.
Uh-huh.
But that software was actually developed by a Limerick-based company, I believe.
Oh, right. Okay, so pat on the back for the Limerick lads and lassies there. The Law Society of Ireland has launched an investigation into a messaging group which is alleged to have targeted female students attending courses at the solicitors' training body. That's Blackhall Place that they're talking about there. Interesting to see that story emerge over the last 3 or 4 days.
It is, Ger. It is something that we've spoken so many times about, you know, online apps and social media and all of those things. This was a closed network around a WhatsApp group. Obviously, somebody went and showed it, and therein lies the problem. I suppose, well, the problem lies in the fact that the stuff was put up there originally. Anyway. I know Nolan Blackwell, who's the head of the Rape Crisis Centre in Dublin, was on national radio yesterday as well, and she was speaking about it, and her attitude was, let's not take this and minimise it and say boys will be boys, they'll do this sort of thing. Her attitude was, look, these are people that these lads are going to be working with for the rest of their working lives. It shows a level of disrespect. It shows a level of almost animosity. And it also shows that, again, once you go behind a keyboard, people turn into something that they're not.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. We leave it there because we can't comment too much on it because there's not a whole lot of information in the public domain at the moment. Housing Minister Owen Murphy has said that he cannot condone building firms paying protection money to criminals to safeguard against antisocial behaviour at construction sites. A High Court hearing on Tuesday heard that a known criminal and his associate are alleged to have extorted money from companies, including one which was building houses for Dublin City Council, by offering them protection from antisocial behaviour in return for thousands of euro per week. This has been going on since Adam was a boy.
Yeah, and I mean, it's anecdotally, you would have heard of this going on quite a bit over the years.
Yeah.
It's also, I mean, the foundation of the mafia, the foundation of criminal organisations right the way across the world have been involved in this.
Yeah.
And I suppose what's happened here is that Simon Coveney has got dragged into this as well because he was the minister, and it is believed that there was a knowledge of this in the department when he was there. Justice Carmel Stewart of the High Court found that over €250,000 was in 4 bank accounts linked to Derek O'Driscoll, and that was the proceeds of crime. Cab CC bank accounts in December 2018, and Justice Stewart's order means that the money will be kept by the state. So they got it back anyway. Murphy said he only heard about the case in the reports last night, stating that they're trying to get to the bottom of it. Dublin City Council is looking into it, and they're investigating with their own staff. The bottom line is that this has been going on forever. Criminality, unfortunately, is out there. I know that legitimate security firms have been bleating on about this for an awfully long time as well. Mm-hmm. And the level of security, in inverted commas, that goes on in the black economy is quite considerable as well.
Okay. Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin has called on the government to consider extending the workplace smoking ban to cover vaping products during leaders' questions in Dáil Éireann during the week. Mr. Martin said that there is a vaping epidemic that is being promoted by the tobacco industry, and his comments come after US health officials have linked the practice of vaping 1,000 illnesses and 19 deaths across 48 states. I think I've seen something subsequently that has said that the death rate in America is 26 related to vaping. And I think the concern in all of this is around children as well, isn't it? Younger people that are smoking.
It is, and pretty much everywhere you go now, there's somebody sucking on one of these
things.
It
looks ridiculous.
It looks ridiculous, and it drives me nuts. Now, look, I'm not a smoker, and I'm not trying to get off cigarettes, so I suppose maybe if that's what people are using it for, well then, fair enough. It's a bit of Back to the Future here for Micheál Martin, though.
A
little bit. It worked for him on the smoking ban, and I suppose if he doesn't make Taoiseach in his lifetime, it'll be the thing that he'll be most remembered for is the fact that he brought in the smoking ban originally. So I suppose this is something that's close to his heart, obviously. He said that he had been really succeeded in terms of getting young people away from the whole idea of a nicotine addiction. The whole strategy is to get young people addicted to nicotine via these vaping devices. In response, then, the Taoiseach, who of course himself is a doctor, he should know a little bit about this, said he agreed that the involvement of the tobacco industry in making vaping products was a cause for concern. And he added that the young people are indeed being targeted with advertising. So I suppose, Ger, is it smoking? Is it nicotine? is it causing damage? The problem was that when these things were introduced first, that there was no longitudinal study had been done on these because they just burst onto the scene. They seem, in my view, to have got awfully complicated. They seem to have become into the mainstream in a major way. I find it a little bit objectionable, even if it's only vape that goes up in the air. If I'm talking to somebody and they blow something at me, I'm sorry, it just doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, I suppose when you get away, when you think about it, I remember as a child being in maybe a theatre or being in a cinema, and people all around you smoking, and you were coming back into your eyes and your face, and it was just the norm. And how even sitting in a pub or maybe in a restaurant, the same thing would happen, or an airplane. Like you forget about it, don't you? You just forget about it.
I suppose the other thing is, both you and I, Ger, have done gigs over the years where we've been in, you know, in hotels and restaurants and all sorts of places doing gigs. And so you'd come home at 3 o'clock in the morning, Ger, and you'd have to towel your hair.
That's right.
And then the following morning, you'd turn into the pillow when you wake up, and there'd be a smell of smoke off the pillow. And I used to store the bit of PA equipment I had under the stairs at home. And if I opened under the stairs, it was just horrendous.
Yeah.
And I know a friend of mine who's in the repairs business for PA equipment said that his business actually dropped by a factor of about 33% after the smoking ban was introduced, because he said the soup that would have accumulated on components had all disappeared.
Wow. Yeah, I remember that. I had a box, big long box, that I used to put my singles into, you know, the 45s, and there was always a smell of smoke off that. Now, that's actually stored in my parents' attic, and I was in the attic recently looking for stuff, and I was just looking at the box, and the smell is actually finally gone. It might have taken 20 years, but the smell is finally gone, which is great. Anyway, Georgie, that's our lot for today.
There's probably about half a dozen of those singles in that box belong to me, I'd say.
There'd be three or four at the most.
And the rest belong to Radio Limni.
I would humbly suggest that you may have one or two belonging to me, so.
Video killed the radio star, Ger.
Really? I wonder. Anyway, I must have a look through and see if there is, actually, because your name was usually on them and the price tag. Anyway, good luck, and we'll chat to you next week for another G2 Summit.
All right, Ger, you look after yourself.
Chat to you soon. Bye, George.
Bye-bye.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net.
Welcome back to the programme. Nice to have your company on this Monday evening. I did tell you that I would be joined on the phone from Madrid, from the Embassy of Ireland there, by the Irish Ambassador to Spain, Sheila Maguire, and she joins me on the phone right now. Ambassador Maguire, you're no stranger to the programme, but it's always a joy to welcome you. How are you?
Great, Jaron. Thanks for having me back on.
Not at all. We were having a very quick conversation before we started this, and you were telling me that a man that I would meet regularly when I'm in Ireland, because I'm based in County Clare, was in Madrid recently looking for me, I believe, Minister Pat Breen.
He was. Minister Breen was here last week. We were talking about how he led a trade mission, an Enterprise Ireland trade mission. 17 Irish companies were here last week, and they all met with a range of, you know, either current or prospective partners in the Spanish market.
Great.
And it was a really successful mission put together by the Enterprise Ireland team here.
Fantastic. And you looked after him well, did you?
Yes, it was a two-way street. Yes, he had a very busy day. He met with the Spanish Minister for Trade, and he met with all of the 17 Irish companies, and then he met that evening with the key contacts of a lot of the companies. So he was very busy.
Oh, great. And yourself, I'm sure you are extremely busy as ambassador.
Yes, I mean, there's a lot going on, and you know, it's a great time in bilateral relations. Generally, there's a lot happening on the trade area, as I mentioned, but also on the cultural area and the people-to-people contacts.
Good. And that's exactly why we're talking to you today. And just for listeners' information, I get regular updates from the embassy, as do a lot of people in Spain, just in relation to Irish cultural events happening in and around Spain. And I'd normally pick and choose, and I'd say, oh yeah, that one's over already, so we won't use that, but I'll use this one and this one. And there's usually bits and pieces that I can use from time to time. But when I received the last bulletin, there was so much on it. There's an awful lot happening over the next wee while. And I just thought it would be nice to get somebody to run through it with me and have a chat with me about it, who would know about it. And I'm delighted to say that you put your hand up and volunteered. So thank you for doing that, Ambassador.
Happy to have the opportunity, because, you know, these events are happening around the country, and some of them may be of interest to your listeners.
Great, I'm sure they will be. Let us start with something that's happening in Malaga. a well-known artist, Sean Scully. There's a fabulous exhibition coming up, and that's starting this week. In fact, it's starting tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it starts on the 15th of October in the Centro de Arte Contemporáneo de Málaga. And Sean Scully, of course, is one of the leading Irish artists. So I think it's a really fantastic opportunity to see his work in Málaga, in that important cultural institution, between tomorrow and then early January. So lots of opportunities for people to fit in an afternoon in Málaga to see that.
Yeah, I've got a number of notifications about that. So there appears to be a lot of interest in the media about it. So I'm guessing that it will be very well attended. Now, a pop-up Gaeltacht. And for anybody that doesn't know what a Gaeltacht is, it's an Irish-speaking area. You'd have parts of the west of Ireland and I suppose Kerry, Donegal, Galway, all that area would be very much Gaeltacht areas. What's a pop-up Gaeltacht?
Well, what's happening in Madrid is what's happening really all around the world. There's also a group in Valencia who meet regularly. In Madrid, the Círculo Coro, which is the conversational circle, they get together about every couple of months. And the idea is that whoever wishes to speak Irish, some have excellent Irish and some have very little Irish. Mm. But the idea is that people come and use what they have in a kind of sociable environment. And as they say, Tá fáilte roimh cách, caint ar éileafa, daoine tá cúpla focal, ná daoine a bhfuil simach mún aige.
And that's just
so that means you're all welcome. That means you're all welcome.
And the kettle will be on. All right.
Yes, yes.
Something that I made a promise to myself that I would attend this year, but unfortunately I won't be able to. I'll be back in Ireland. And that is the 16th Cathras Irish FLA, which is a fabulous weekend. And I know that you have been there on more than one occasion.
Yes, and it's an extraordinary festival. And the only challenge we have is that we also have an amazing festival the same weekend in Sitges. So, you know, our message to Irish people and to people who enjoy Irish tradition is, you know, try and visit both of them. Let me start then with the Cathras one. It's heading into its 16th year, and there's about 12,000 to 15,000 people descend upon the beautiful, beautiful historic city of Cathras to see Irish music and dancing. This year, the headliners include Dervish out of Sligo and the Peter Brown Band. And there's also Spanish-based musicians. You know, there's musicians from Andalusia, from Galicia, from Madrid, from Valencia. And so it's a great opportunity to meet with Irish people who live all around the peninsula. Last year I met people over from the Irish community in Lisbon were there as well. So Cathras is halfway between Madrid and Lisbon, and, you know, easy reach as well from all around Andalusia and, as I said, from Galicia. So in a way it's the heart of the peninsula. So that's happening from the 25th to the 27th of October.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same weekend, the Irish Arts Festival, Sitges Live, will kick off. And again, it's a wonderful festival curated by Caroline Casey and her crew. And, you know, this year, Paddy Casey is the headline. A really special part of this year's celebration is a birthday celebration for John Sheehan. John Sheehan, the legendary figure of the Dubliners. Mm. And it's his 80th birthday celebrations there. I think they're doing that on the Saturday night, and that'll be a really special concert. And people like Martin Tourish and others will be involved in that. So it's a very attractive arts festival. It covers, you know, various facets of our culture. There's a lot of groups coming over. For example, young Irish coming over from Kiltory groups in Ireland are coming, and I think some Music Generation people. So it's a very vibrant, family-friendly weekend as well. So there's two great festivals. Sure, pick one and do one this year and do the other next year is what I say.
Yeah, I really do need to ring fence that weekend and maybe make it next year, but we'll see, fingers crossed. Something, Ambassador, that we normally talk about in great detail around June is Bloomsday, but the Bloomsday Society in Madrid is fairly active.
Yes, I mean, they try and meet on a monthly basis, and of course their main big event is in June around Bloomsday. This year they had a special event to commemorate the Irish Hispanist Ian Gibson, and also to generally celebrate all things James Joyce. Actually, when I mention Ian Gibson, I must congratulate Ian. Ian is in November going to receive from President Higgins the Presidential Distinguished Service Award.
Hello.
For his services, you know, in culture and literature. And Ian will be our first Spanish-based recipient of that award. But back to Bloomsday. Yes, the Bloomsday Society in Madrid meet generally every month, and they work their way through various Joyce works, reading and sharing their thoughts, and often have musicians joining in with them as well.
Sounds absolutely fantastic. The Communications Workers Union Band from Dublin are going to pay us a visit. Tell me about them.
Yes, well, they are playing a concert of band music in the Hotel Exe in Sevilla in October the 30th. Again, great to see events spread around the country. And, you know, the idea is that they would love to see, as well as playing to their local host city of Seville, that they'd love to see any Irish people in the region who might enjoy it.
And it's a free event as well.
Indeed, in the spirit of trade unionism.
Yeah, I was going to say it.
You know, exactly. It being accessible to everybody, I think it'll be a very engaging, a very warm night's entertainment.
Grab your comrades and head on down there. That's the 30th,
exactly.
of, 30th of October. Now, the Eamon Doyle exhibition is on in Madrid, and it's there until the 26th of January. Have you seen it?
It's an amazing exhibition. It is simply beautiful, and it's a very important collection of Eamon's work. Eamon is really one of the Irish photographers that the rest of the world are most excited about. The Fundación MAPFRE is a very significant cultural institution across Spain, and its branch in Madrid hosts very significant photographic exhibitions, and that Eamon has been selected for this in and of itself is a very strong endorsement of the quality of his work. A lot of it is photographs of Dublin, of the immediate area around where he lives in Dublin 1, around Parnell Street, and then also another section of it is a photographic exhibition covering photographs from Extremadura and Connemara. It's a stunning exhibition.
Oh, lovely. And there until the 26th of January, so plenty of time to get to it. Now, an event that I've already mentioned a couple of weeks ago, it's a joint Hispano-Irish evening of poetry and music to celebrate the 120th anniversary of Federico García Lorca's birth. Tell me about that. It's happening on the 7th of November, I think.
It's moving to Granada. It's actually now, it's gone international. So this Loca por Lorca performance was put together by Irish musician Cormac Branagh, and he has invited Irish poets Keith Payne, who's an Irish poet who's based in Galicia and Vigo, and Theo Dorgan, who of course is one of our best known poets and a member of Athdona. What they have done is each of them have translated the work of Lorca, five poems of Lorca. Keith translated into English, Theo translated into Irish, and then a Spanish poet will read in Spanish. And then Cormac has put together music, some of his own composition and also some traditional pieces, both Irish and Spanish. He's put that together with Spanish musician friends of his. It was premiered in Madrid last year in the Residencia de Estudiantes, where García Lorca lived as a student for a few years. And at the moment, it's on tour in Ireland. For example, this coming Saturday, it's going to be on in the Farmley House in the Phoenix Park.
Okay.
Cormac and friends are bringing the performance to Granada, and I think it's going to be a very special night. Again, I'd encourage people with an interest in it to check that out.
When you get a mix of Irish, English, Spanish poetry and Irish music and Spanish music, it just makes for a wonderful evening, doesn't it?
Exactly, a very special evening, yes.
Well, Ambassador, that sounds absolutely brilliant. Unfortunately, the time has kind of caught us, and I know there's a lot more to do. I know you're extremely busy, but is there any chance that you might come back next week and run through another few bits and pieces with us?
Of course, I'd be happy to share.
I'm sorry to do that, but there is so much, and it's probably your own fault for doing such good work in Madrid and the Irish Embassy. But listen, for the moment, can I say thank you very much for joining us this evening on Live on Era. Look forward to chatting to you again next week when we'll get a lot more information about other things that are happening in the area. In the meantime, have a good week, and thank you so much for joining us.
Same to you, Ger. Lovely to catch up. Bye, Sláinte.
And that is where we're going to leave it for this evening. What a lovely way to go out on top, as the fella says. But before I go, can I just give a quick mention to the lads and the lassies of the Costa Gaels. They have a game against Aeroge in Sevilla. Well, not actually in Sevilla. It's going to be in Marbella. But the lads from Sevilla are going to be travelling. It's on this coming Saturday, the 19th of October at 2 p.m. And they would love to see as many people as they possibly can. And we wish them well. Thank you so much for your company this evening. It's been an action-filled programme for sure. Thank you very much to Patricia Traynor for her story. Muchas gracias, as always, to George Lee for the G2 Summit. And of course, thank you very much to our Spanish-Irish cultural correspondent and consultant, Jose Antonio Sierra, who looks after us very, very well. Look after yourselves in the coming week. If you can join me tomorrow, that'd be fantastic. I'm on from 1 to 3, filling in for Selena here on Talk Radio Europe. If not, I shall see you next Monday, all being well, between 6 and 7. Until then, from me, Ger Sweeney, thank you for your company. Look after yourselves and each other. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye now.
Ger Sweeney presents Live on Era in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit TRE.radio.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans, meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.